from A1 Studios in Sunset Park, Brooklyn, New York. This is the Rob Aguilar Show.
Today is a very special day because for a very long time, I've been trying to get one of my best friends in the entire planet, Mike Mudrick, on the show. Mudrick. I'm trying to add a little flair to it.
Gotcha.
Finally, he's on. And you'll notice from his very, how do we say it?
Strong.
In English. He's got this Philly twang that is really cool. And that's because he's from the Philly area.
That's right.
So we go back. I want to say we go back to, almost 2005, 2006?
Yeah, right around that time, definitely. Working relationship to start.
Working relationship, and then that developed to a really, really strong friendship. There isn't anything I wouldn't do for this guy. So he's on here. We're going to chit-chat about many different things. I think for the most part, you know, we have a lot of things in common. We're both fathers, not holy fathers. We're going to talk about relationships, something that we talk about a lot. And on last week's episode, we had Mr. Dave Pounder. He is a former porn actor. He has a very interesting take on relationships, and I wanted to get your thoughts on what he said, because you've been married how long now?
Oof. 18 years.
18 years. I've been married for 5 years last week.
Yeah. Well, happy anniversary, by the way. No, but when you first told me that guy was coming on, you know, and you sent me the link to his bio and everything, and you got to kind of laugh. It's a porn star. And Rob's telling me, oh, how educated he is, and he's got a BA in this, and he economics, I believe, and then
his undergrad is economics. He has a PhD in psychology.
Okay. It's not a PhD in physics or chemistry. It's a PhD in sociology. And, you know, not to take away from it, I'm sure it takes as much hard work, but I don't necessarily think that, you know, you're at the top of the food chain academically. When you major in those things, I'm sure I just pissed a lot of people off. But oh well, fuck it. So after hearing that he's a porn star and how educated he is, I said, well, you know, what are you going to talk about? What could possibly be the topic? Dick length, you know, all his conquests. What was it going to be? And it turns out that I guess it was more political than. Well, not necessarily political, but
we got into a lot of things. We got into what it was like to perform in the porn industry. And a lot of times when you think dudes in porn, you think that they're fucking other dudes. And
well, I generally, from what I've read, that's how it all starts.
Well, he said that wasn't the case. That's like a misconception. I don't know if he was the pickiest male porn star ever, but he was saying how he got to pick and choose who he banged, and if it was
Dave Pounder. I mean,
it's a unique story. But what really stood out was the fact that he says women in relationships should not be upset or take it personal when their husbands or boyfriends or fiancés mess around with other chicks.
Yeah, so what was the other side of that? What should Dave Pounder be upset if his wife of – is he married, by the way?
He's not.
Yeah, of course not.
But he says because it's really not personal when a guy – cheats on his wife or cheats on his girlfriend.
But it is, if a woman cheats on a man, it's personal because I guess they're – I mean, that's pretty archaic and very, very basic in my estimation of things, that women are more cerebral and when it comes down to relationships, it's more platonic first than it is – I think that's total bullshit. I think that there's just as many women out there and, you know, come on, let's take female porn stars for instance. There's nothing cerebral or platonic there. They're there to fuck.
Mm-hmm.
Am I wrong? And get paid for it.
Right.
So I don't kind of get his logic.
I didn't understand it either, and I disagreed with him. I said, well, you know, if these guys are cheating on their wives, they're fucking other women, right? I mean, women. I mean, so there is something animalistic about it, because that's what he was trying to say. You know, it's in the male DNA to want variety. And where you don't see that in women. For example, he said, and we'll try this experiment with you.
So he's a geneticist also?
Well, apparently so.
Sorry, Dave, I never met you. I'm kind of jamming you up here, but
Maybe we'll bring him on.
Maybe we'll bring him back. Is he a big dude? No, I don't mean penis wise. Is he like?
Yeah, he's like.
Could he whip my? Think he could whip my ass?
It would be a good match.
Ugh, maybe we should talk about something else.
It would be.
Maybe we should move on.
It would be a good match. He's I don't know, like 6'3", 6'4". Okay, so his example was: could you name off the top of your head five powerful men that we know cheated on their wives?
Sure. Look at any world leader, okay. including one of our own.
Okay. He said
several of our own. You could throw Kennedy in there as well.
So he said that you couldn't do the same for women. You never heard of Condoleezza Rice and the intern banging in the bathroom.
Now, here's another thing Hillary. That you can throw out there. What's her name? The Hewlett-Packard lady.
Yeah, she's running for president?
Yeah, I mean, she's not – there's a misconception out there that I think guys will go and basically bang anything that they possibly can get their hands on. And I'm sure we've all been through it. We've all had our time back in college or when we were younger where, you know, you went out and you were at a bar and you basically took home what you could get. But as you get older and as you yourself become more successful in some instances, you know, you get a little bit choosy. Now, would I choose her? No, I wouldn't. If I was a guy and I didn't know who she was, no. By no means would I go home with that woman. So maybe that's why. You know, there's an intimidation factor, I guess, when a powerful man is there and the woman knows that, hey, you know, this guy's the president of the United States, or he runs GE, or he's, you know, doing something great on Wall Street. Yeah.
It's a matter of how the guy is perceived. So the short, bald dude who's kind of chubby doesn't get chicks.
That would not – unless he's successful. He has some money.
So that's exactly, I guess, the point. If you have a certain level of power – or if you portray yourself to have power or confidence or money, then if you're short, chubby, and bald.
Yeah, but you could be short, chubby, and bald and have the best line of shit in the world. And I think that's ultimately – if he's that good, he should be able to close deals as well. And, yeah, it helps if you're loaded and you're driving a very nice vehicle and you can say that you work for Goldman Sachs. I mean, you might be the janitor for Goldman Sachs, but nobody has to know that. Hey, I work for Goldman Sachs, you know. If you have a good enough line of shit, there's no stopping you. And what does stop people with very good lines of shit and a good rap is confidence. And ultimately, in my opinion, that's what it comes down to. You can be the ugliest man alive. If you're confident and you walk into a room and you own that room – I think that rubs off, and I think that women see that. And
for sure.
I mean, if you're a drummer for, you know, if you're Tommy Lee, yeah, you walk in a room and they're just throwing themselves at you. Totally different. I mean, right. That's a very, very, very small percentage.
Right.
Dave Pounder walks into a room. He might just be a 6'4", good-looking dude, but he's going to have to work at it because I'm sure, you know, there's not a Dave Pounder fan club.
Probably not.
You know what I mean? So you got to work at it. Did you have other people on, too, that wrote books and said, oh, you know – what was the guy from Harlem that said he could pick up – he could guarantee that he picked up any –
Yeah. He wrote a book about – the title of the book was Why Women Cheat.
So now you have another –
Confessions of a Pickup Artist.
Another male perspective,
yeah.
Right,
mm-hmm.
On why women do what they do. Did you ever have a woman on that wrote a book, Why Women Cheat? You see what I'm saying?
I actually had two women on at the same time. That we touched on
how they look. No, just kidding.
They were okay. They were in their
no, just kidding.
They were in their 40s, no, 50s. Fifties.
But right. Well, there's very attractive women.
But I guess when they were younger, they were probably really good looking.
Oh, that's a very harsh statement. You should have never
said
that.
No.
What are your demographics, by the way? Because if it's 18 to 53, no, you just lost, you know, 48 and above females.
It's males 25 to 40.
Okay.
And that's about 85% according to our
– Well, you and I are already over that demographic.
Yeah. Slightly.
Slightly.
And I think 15% are women 25 to 35.
That banging in the background is a bottle of tequila. I apologize, but
– So these women were talking about the misconceptions about women and men cheating. Like they said that the old traditional data said – men cheat, like we were saying before, because it's easy, because it's visual. And you could totally be in love with your wife, with your girlfriend, your fiance, but a hot chick walks by and she offers you the opportunity to get with her. 9 out of 10 times, the dude will take it.
Right. But what did they say about?
So they said that the women mind, the old data, and these women were also psychologists. They were saying that traditional data stated that women cheated for emotional reasons. That from their research, that's not true. Women cheat for the same reasons men cheat, because they want to have sex and they enjoy variety as well. It's just that there's certain sociological rules that were in place for generations.
Agreed.
And now that's starting to change with women being more open about their sexuality.
You know, in the end, we're all human beings, no matter how you look at it.
Right.
So I mean, there's some crazy ones, there's some normal ones, and there's some substandard ones. But as you
– Well, you're going into a whole other –
No.
Yeah, and that's another thing that it's a running joke that I have with my brother, because he's almost 40. He's not married yet.
So he, by the way, never will get married.
It's funny because Anna
says – He's not the marrying type.
Anna says the same thing. And so let's touch a little bit on his philosophies. Well, we have this conversation. I said, listen, dude, you got to settle down. Not necessarily have kids, because
– You're a guy, in my estimation, that you have a very strong feeling about your culture, which is great, but also about your religion, about how things should be, mm-hmm. okay? And it's funny how there's three brothers. There's you and two brothers, right? Mm-hmm. What does the youngest feel?
The youngest – You and I would probably classify him as a hipster doofus.
Oh, boy. He's a hipster.
Well, look, because look, he doesn't work.
Well, neither do you, but that's...
he plays Dota all day.
What is that? Is that like a game?
Yeah, it's these tournaments, and they make a lot of money.
It's not. Tell me, it's not like cards, like
no. It's
magic, or
no,
it's not like Minecraft. Is
no, no,
it?
No. It's a game online. It's a computer game thingy.
What's the concept of?
I don't know. I've walked by at his place when he's playing, and he has other hipster kids.
It sounds like it's ISIS subterfuge.
That's how they recruit animals and horses. I don't know. It's called Dota. I think some German kids invented it. I'm not too familiar with it.
That explains a lot.
So he's got it really easy. He's a senior in school, and he just in college. I worked during college. You know, like my parents were very particular about instilling those values.
Well, so did your brother. But
I think with him, they just kind of like, we're too old for this.
Well, yeah. No, hey, look, you know, he's finally out of the house right. and we can enjoy our own lives. Right. That's what I'm looking forward to with four kids. But
oh, my God. I don't know how you do it. It's fun. It's fun. But getting back to what we were saying before with my brother, and we have conversations all the time about this. And he says, you know, I'm dating a ton of chicks, banging different women whenever I go out, and having a great time. But they're all fucking crazy. Like, they're nuts.
Well, I can attest to that. I mean,
I said, my response to that, I said, well, I agree with you. They are all fucking crazy.
Sure.
You have to find an acceptable level of crazy. You know, when you're looking for a woman that you want to settle down with, it's got to be like a normal level of – an acceptable level of craziness.
Listen to what we're saying. How insane is this? Because it's the truth. I mean, we both chose to spend our lives with one person. And I can tell you this, it does not get easier. Of course.
Really?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, of course we stay the same. We don't change. The men are perfect, right? So as time goes on, you know, as you go through different hormonal cycles and things like that, you know, four kids later, five kids later, things change. And
for the better, for the worse?
It depends, because that what you're talking about, and I kind of buying into it, the acceptable level of crazy is not a static it's the constantly evolving level of crazy. And it's funny, because when you're young and full of piss and vinegar and you're first married and you fight that fight and you wanna let them know that you're the man of the house and that you know your word goes, eventually, and I've seen it with all of my friends, all of my family, eventually after about the 10th or 12th year, you just become very accepting. So I don't know that they change. They may just realize that over the years, the men try to instill this level or this idea that they're in charge, they wear the pants, and then they just get tired of banging their head against the wall.
And
I really believe that's what happens, because, you know, early on it's...
You're scaring me.
No, I'm just telling you, you shouldn't be scared, because you're in this for the long haul. What I'm saying is...
Because being that, you know, macho, Latino.
You're trying to win the war. Yeah. You're trying to win the war in the beginning. And now it comes down to, honestly, and you've seen it said and heard it a million times, you pick your battles. And, you know, those battles that you pick, you end up just seceding your General Lee at the end of the day. It's just fucking over. You know, because ultimately, and this is what the sick thing is. I got to say this, because even after, you know, almost 20 years of marriage, bottom line, all you want at the end of the day
is a pussy. Sandwich.
No, you don't want to fucking say. You want to get blowed, or you want right. some pussy. And they learn that by withholding it more and more.
Oh, my God.
I'm telling you. It's how it happened. Remember when you first started dating and all bets were off? Bye, bye, bye. You know, you're going nuts.
Banging like rabbits.
Then as time goes on, you know, it's the old famous joke. What do you put in a woman's mouth to stop them from giving blowjobs? Wedding cake. And it's the truth. You know, because now they got you. You're hooked. So from that point on, they know all you want is a piece of ass. They know that.
So they minute.
And now
so
you
are you
have,
saying they ration the pussy? Is that what?
Yeah, of course they do. The fact is this. They learn over time. Because now throw a kid into the mix. Mm-hmm. Maybe she's working, maybe she's not. Throw the kid's activities into the mix. So you have all this stuff going on. And ultimately all the man wants at the end of the day is a piece of ass.
Or a blowjob.
Now, I was watching, what do you call it, yesterday? I should have been working, but I was watching Steve Harvey's show. Guy cracks me up. And he had these people on, and this guy called it stirring the crock pot. So what that is, you know, when you cook a meal in a crock pot, mm-hmm. you throw all the shit in the morning, right? You give it a little stir. And when you come home at night.
Food's done.
Done. You're ready to eat. So what his thing is that men need to start in the morning. You know, maybe wake up, roll over, give her a kiss, little tickle, little hugging, you know, set the tone for the day. So this dude goes on and he says, I did that. And then he cleaned the house. And she goes, what do you mean? You cleaned the house. You vacuumed. You know what I mean? So ultimately, all he did was he gave her a little kiss in the morning, mm-hmm. vacuumed. And now he needed his piece of ass when she came home from work. Do you get the analogy?
Totally.
You spend every male from the time they hit puberty to the time they die, 98% of their energy is spent on getting laid. I don't care if it's Donald Trump. I don't care. Name the most successful person in the world. 99% of your energy is spent doing that. It could be in very subtle ways, like stirring the crock pot. Geez, you know, if I'm nice to her now,
she's going to give me
some
love.
Maybe I'll get something later, you know.
That actually works kind of subconsciously, because now that you're mentioning this.
Totally becomes innate. Totally becomes subconscious and innate.
It's fucking hilarious what you're saying.
There's guys listening to this right now that say, no way, man. When I say I want it, I get it. Bullshit.
Right.
You're doing little things to fucking keep her even keeled, just so she doesn't slide too far to the left and go bonkers. You're trying to keep her happy so you can get a piece.
It's extremely interesting that you say that, because it actually kind of becomes part of your routine.
It is, but it's subconscious.
Well, you're saying it, and I'm analyzing it in what I do throughout the day. And if I want to be nice, I'll clean up after the kid. Because our living room it's like a tornado hit it.
Sure.
So when I want to do something, when I want to go out with the guys for a drink or take some time to record the show, I find myself doing these things.
You have to get her in a mood.
But it's almost like I'm doing it not knowing. Like it's just like my subconscious is taking over and doing it because this is ultimately what I want.
I mean, is that right that a man has to go through these iterations and through these?
But then, to be fair, maybe they do the same thing. You know, like, okay, so if they manipulate the sex and ration the pussy, then maybe...
Then when they want something, yeah.
Of course.
They dish it out.
You know, yeah, she'll rock your world because
there you go.
She wants to go...
I want something.
Exactly. I
want
to go on a vacation, or...
There you go.
I need a new wardrobe, or...
There you go.
I need to have a girl's night out.
It could be it.
So I'm going to blow you like...
Well, I mean, look, we're here to solve the world's problems, and I think we may have just figured that out. So how do you go on?
So do you fight it or just accept it and go on?
It's an accepted way of life now. It's the accepted fact that you both... Nobody really has ultimate control. I mean, there are instances. There's always extremes to everything. Mm-hmm. And I know a few people that I think have gone to those extremes, and that, you know, the man is either ultimately controlled by the woman or vice versa. It's more so if I counted the five people I'm thinking of, it's four men that are just fucking whipped, and it's the one woman that's whipped on the other end.
Don't you feel bad for those dudes?
Well, I mean, do I feel bad? You got your fucking self into it, man. You may not be the ultimate, you know, the machismo in this, but you got to fight back a little bit. You have to show that you got a set and that you can hang.
Yeah.
If you can't hang, it's a lost cause. At that point, you've just given up completely.
Yeah.
And they'll tell you they're happy. Oh, no, she's the center of my universe. You can be the center of somebody's universe. There's no doubt about it. But there's right and wrong. There's always two sides of the story. There's always, you know, effort that has to be given on both sides. You can't just throw the towel in. Fuck that.
I think part of it also has to do with if you give in too quickly, I don't think women find that attractive either. Like, you need to have a little level of resistance to kind of keep things exciting.
I don't know.
Because
if we understood
otherwise,
the fuck they thought was attractive.
Because think about it. Because otherwise, then you're just a big fucking pussy. And I can't imagine a woman ever finding that attractive.
Yeah, but if you're a really controlling woman and that's, you know, your MO and that you want people to.
Well, then
they might like that. May get them off. Do you ever think of that?
Possibly.
So maybe that guy that we're calling a dummy for giving up may have the – he may have to put up with the shit, do the wash, mow the lawn, do this, do that, blah, 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 blah.
I couldn't live like that.
Oh, I couldn't either.
That's
why we're in constant fucking battles. That's why that happened.
You have to have, a little level of excitement, which brings me back to – I don't think women prefer or like weak men. You have to have a little edge. You just have to.
Well, you know, you're speaking from a Latin background.
Well,
go speak to a Russian woman or Eastern European woman.
Bro,
they love to offend everybody equally.
But they love that. They
you
love
think?
That. Absolutely. Because it's different than what they're used to culturally. Look, I think back as we're talking about this to an example. When we were – do you remember Roman's wedding?
Yes, barely.
Okay. Do you remember we were at the bar? After the wedding?
Oh, when the little guy tried.
The little guy, he got nuts.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
So if you don't have that edge, I don't think women feel safe. If you remember that.
You got a one-legged midget running around with fucking crutches saying he's going to whip my ass.
He's starting trouble with people. So do you remember what Anna said?
Yes.
That time? What did she say?
I believe she told you to put down your beer and go.
Take care of this guy.
But, you know, after we kind of got to know this guy, he may have beat your ass.
That was after the fact.
That would have been fucking funny.
He wouldn't have beat my ass.
Now what happens? You put your beer down. You're Billy Badass. You're going to beat the brakes off this fucking guy. And with one leg and a set of crutches.
Oh, he'd have no shot.
He pummels you.
He'd have no shot. He'd have no shot.
He took down that bouncer at the Limelight 25 years ago.
25 years ago.
I mean, think about it.
That's part of the edge. That the woman with you feels that you can handle business if you need to handle business. So I think women need that. They enjoy that. They need to feel safe.
I just carry a gun.
That's like the old Texan American.
And look at them. I mean, look at Dog the fucking Bounty Hunter with his mullet and everything else. I actually love the show. I love the guy. I think he's doing solid work, but.
Really?
Yeah, I mean.
He's like a fucking.
Yeah, but.
He's got like the fucking Joe Dirt fucking hairdo. I mean.
But, you know, he's become an iconic figure. I just had to give a shout out there to Dog and Beth and Lily.
In what circles?
I don't know. In the bounty hunting circles.
Not in Brooklyn.
Well, no, he doesn't. His beard isn't big enough in Brooklyn to. I don't want to offend anyone, but I'm sure I will with this whole hipster movement. Is that what we're moving into? Is that what you're provoking me to do?
No, I'm not at all. I'm just shocked that you find this guy.
I was still a little boy. I was still a little boy in the mid to late 70s, and my sister's 5 years older. And I remember she came home with a Sex Pistols record, and we put it on, and I fucking fell in love. Mm-hmm. I thought, holy shit, these people – not understanding the politics of Great Britain mm-hmm. in the mid to late 70s, mm-hmm. not understanding the politics of the United States, but – and there was no internet then. There was – the only thing we saw basically were album covers and what we saw in newspapers. Even our demographic should pick up a fucking newspaper now again instead of looking on the internet. I see Johnny Rotten. I see fucking Sid Vicious. And I go nuts. I'm like, wow. So my sister was in what they call the punk movement. And that was generally a group of people that have, from what I understood, that rejected society, you know, anarchy, this whole nine yards. And they were different. You'd get a mohawk. You'd pierce your face 52 times. You'd do these crazy things. Fast forward 2013, 2012. What ultimately happened with the punk movement, I think, is that people started looking around and going, geez, we're no different. We're all the same. How come the hipsters haven't figured that out yet? Can you explain that? Walking around with a fucking boombox and skinny jeans and Chucks, I don't get it.
Well, today
there's 500 other people doing the same thing.
Well, today's boombox is now like, I told you what I saw the other day.
No.
When I was in the park with my son.
What part? The one they parked the cars at that made everybody angry?
No.
Pier, whatever, 58th and 1st?
We were at Prospect Park and there was this guy.
Oh, you uppity.
There was this guy running with really short shorts.
We saw the guy at 18th Street in Manhattan in Uggs and running shorts in 3 feet of snow.
So, really short shorts and knee-high socks.
Leg warmers? Flash dance type shit?
No, they were the white tube socks with like colored
stripes. I wore them years ago.
He had headphones on bigger than the headphones you have.
Well, they're the headphones with the built-in radio.
Okay, no, wait. No, this didn't have a built-in radio. It had a wire. And it was attached.
Not to a Walkman.
To a fucking iPad.
That's douche-like. I mean, if you're going to fucking go all out.
Who's running in the park with a fucking.
Go on eBay and get yourself a Sony Walkman. Go old school.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I mean, you got the getup. You got the.
You might as well.
Right. But he had.
If you're going to break out the techniques and walk around town with a set of techniques, like hooked onto a fucking bass drum stand, a holder. Then do it all the same. You know, right. Get an amp and plug into fucking speakers and stop walking. Don't run it out of an iPad.
He was running with an iPad.
Okay.
And I wanted to take a picture, but I wasn't quick.
Do they make holders for, like, not like an iPad mini?
No, this was like a 10.1 iPad. I couldn't fucking.
Well, he's different. I mean, he's being different and they're thinking outside the box.
Really?
Yeah. What do they do for work?
That's a good question. I guess they're into art.
Well, I don't know.
You're into art.
I love art.
So do I.
But some particular artists. Old school shit, though.
Like what?
I like a lot of Dali stuff. I like a lot of Salvador Dali.
Salvador Dali's
yes,
good.
Yes, yes.
I like things like...
Edvard Munch. I love Edvard Munch.
Do you know Jose Clemente Orozco?
No, I know the guy who made the frescoes back in Mexico.
Diego Rivera.
Yes.
He's one of my favorites.
In fact, in my high school, in the chapel, we had an original.
Diego Rivera?
Yes.
Wow.
We had an original.
I thought it was a tragedy when he painted at the lobby of Empire State Building.
Was that him?
That was him. And then they did something really fucking tragic. Because his views, I guess, were a little different, they viewed him as a communist.
Yeah. So what, in the 50s, they took it down, the Red Scare or
Wait,
whatever?
They didn't take it down, bro. They fucking sledgehammered it down.
Yeah, that's one way to get rid of it.
And it was a beautiful fucking mural.
Well, good thing he made a bunch more, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but I actually have one, two, three in my living room. Obviously not originals, but his stuff is just phenomenal.
Killer stuff.
Yeah.
So we like art, I mean.
Yeah, but... that's the thing, though. Like, everyone gets classified into different...
And it shouldn't be. You know, at the end of the day, have my views changed over my entire life? There's no doubt about it. I consider myself a Republican, you know, early on. Now I just want you to fucking leave me alone. I want to watch what I want to watch. I want to listen to what I want to listen to.
It's crazy because...
I want to make money. I have no problem paying taxes. Just leave me alone.
Growing up, and I think maybe this has to do with, I don't know, maybe my family, but... I was Republican, I want to say.
Well, you had no choice.
Wait,
I mean, ultimately, you were what your parents were at the time, if you think about
it. But up until I got into college, and then I was like, these old dudes are fucking wrong.
Well,
they don't know what's going on.
Agreed.
So once I got into college, and I guess I opened my mind to a lot of things, I was like, you guys fucking suck.
It was the worst.
You guys are fucking lost. I don't know if my family was Republican. Maybe they were Republican early on because they were trying to fit in. My family is originally from Mexico. They came here in the 60s. And the whole anti-communism thing and the Republicans were hardcore
with
that.
But they settled in New York.
They did.
Very, very liberal area.
Yeah, which is strange, I guess. Their plan was to come here and work for 4 or 5 years, make some money, go back to Mexico.
Sure.
And they ended up staying 40-something years. And I think... living the true, like, American dream. I mean, my father, like, when you hear about stories from Mexico and you see the typical poverty stricken version of Mexico, because there's a total other side of that, which we've lived in.
Yep.
You know, he lived on the streets. You know, he slept at bus stations. And then coming here and building what he's built, it's like day and night. But
do you know why? And it's a very simple formula. You wake up and you go to fucking work. A study just came out that went up my ass sideways. I think it was from Harvard, where they want to start high school classes. These world-renowned Harvard psychologists or whatever said that they should start high school classes at around 10:30 or 11. I couldn't fucking believe it. You know, the way that I was raised, and look, you know, the country's always been successful. You have the Industrial Revolution back in the late 1800s. You have, you know, after World War II, you got to get up and go to work, man. You got to, whether you're scrubbing floors, you're selling stock, or you're the CEO of a multinational corporation, you got to get up and go to work. Making it easier for somebody. Do you think the Japanese or saying, oh, yeah, you're right, guys. Why don't you get a couple extra fucking hours of sleep? You know.
You'll be more productive?
Well, not only that, it's teaching you a work ethic. Now, is that to say that you're not going to work your ass off from 12 noon until 8 o'clock? I don't know that that dynamic at 8 o'clock, and I don't know that that dynamic needs to change. Early bird gets the worm. I didn't make it up. Somebody else did. But you know what? I've lived by it. And I do well. I'm okay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Making it easier on somebody because they don't want to fucking wake up. Or how come, explain to me how teenagers that were drafted and sent to go kill people in war were more productive at 6 or 7 a.m., okay, in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. Now in the 2000s, they're no longer productive. How can they not be productive at an earlier hour? They're more productive at 11 o'clock. To me, it's an excuse. It's making an excuse for somebody who may not be as good, okay, to kind of level out and even out the pack. If you want to, what it comes down to is, if you want to sit up all night on your device and play, what's the game?
Dota.
And you want to fucking play Candy Crush and all this nonsense that I see these nitwits play, go to fucking bed. Read a book before you go to bed. Read a book or a newspaper. Not online. Pick up a fucking newspaper and read it. Pick up a magazine, a periodical. Pick up a book. I love Stephen King. I read Stephen King. May not be the most educational thing, but he's a master of the language, and he's a command on vocabulary that not many other people do. So when you read that, sometimes you start thinking, geez, maybe I can incorporate these words into my daily language. Mm-hmm. People don't even talk to each other anymore.
We text.
Yeah, you email. Text. Pick up the phone and call me. You know what I mean? Pick up the phone and is what's happening. So we're making excuses for these kids that stay up late until 2 in the morning on their device, playing games, texting people.
So now they
should be able to go to school at 11 because they can't get up in the morning? I don't get it.
You don't think times change?
Times change. The time of day don't change, man.
No,
you got 24 hours.
Don't we evolve as human beings?
You may call it evolution. You have 24 hours a day to live your life, okay? Mm. There's people breathing down your neck every minute of the day. That's how you have to look at life. If you're first up and you're at it and you're ready to go, you always have to have a step. Always have a step, be a step ahead of your competition.
Absolutely. I agree with you.
So by waking up at 11:30, 12, like I said, you think the Japanese, the Chinese are saying, go ahead and sleep. It's okay.
Yeah, but I agree with you to an extent. I think putting in enough time in your work to be successful is important. But there are tons of studies that indicate that, for example, the average work week is 40 hours. You work at a cubicle for 40 hours. And you mentioned Harvard before. Harvard has a group of people that have been studying how productive people are during their work. And one study that particularly sticks out in my mind is, for example, we're the only country on the planet that has a 40, 50-hour work week, where other countries like Germany and in that very powerful sector in Europe, not like the Eastern Europeans, but like the Germans, that their work week is shorter than ours, as far as hours are concerned. So this study from Harvard.
When has any of those countries been the absolute number one world leader? Never.
Well, listen.
When has the U.S. been a world leader?
Well, listen. I look
because at we used to wake up in the morning.
Okay, let me finish my thought. You can tell me what you think about it. You and I have been involved with German companies for some time.
Yes.
Okay. So their routine is like fucking clockwork. I mean, if they say they're going to meet you at 9 o'clock, they're there at fucking 9 o'clock. You know, you're starting at 9. So anyway, these studies, one in particular, I don't remember the name of it, but they were studying our traditional work week versus countries like Sweden, like Switzerland, like Germany, and people like that. The American worker, that the traditional office guy, and I was one years ago, where I worked at a fucking cubicle.
Andy.
There you go. Andy and his fucking stapler. So they determined that you're really, out of those 40 hours, you're really working about real work that produces things for the economy, for yourself, and for the company you're working for, is somewhere around 19.7 hours
you know
a
why,
week.
You know why?
And the
do
rest
you,
of the
do
time.
Do you know
wait,
why?
Wait.
That wasn't the case 30 years ago. Do you know why? There's
the internet.
There's another stuff. Fuck the internet. It's your telephone. How many fucking times do you need to look at Facebook in one day? Do I give a fuck with some idiot? Are you going to find something profound, life-changing, by, I think they call them memes, by a fucking picture of a duck with some saying over it? Do your job. As a matter, that's why we will never win another war. That is exactly why. Because the work ethic and the period of time we work. The same thing has happened in Germany and all over Europe. The cell phone still evolved, and Facebook is all over the world.
So Facebook
so even
is a
though,
problem.
Even though, no. Everything. Twitter, the whole fucking thing is a problem.
Thank you, Glenn Beck.
Listen. Oh, no, stop. Don't ever. You know why we don't have manufacturing anymore? Because people are cutting their other fucking hand off because their one hand is looking at the phone. So they send it over to China, and they say, if you cut both of your hands off, there's 15 people waiting for work.
Well, some of what you're saying is
all of what I say is true.
Slightly on point. Some of the other things are slightly exaggerated.
What?
Okay, so I can relate to working in a cubicle in an office.
By the way, this is being recorded at midnight after the workday. There's no time stamp on these things, are there?
No, not at all. So personally, let's go back to before the internet era where being online was like a big fucking deal. Working in a fucking cubicle, cold calling people to buy junk stock, which is one of my first jobs out of school, before this whole internet thing.
Did you fill out an application and send a resume to that company?
I'll tell you what I did.
I'm asking you. They came and got you?
Let me tell you the story. So,
is it going to be quick? Because I have a good point.
Okay. Make your point.
The point is, somebody from this company talked to you and said, Robert, I mean, everybody fucking saw Boiler Room. Give me a break. They said to you.
Well, this is way before Boiler Room was even a fucking.
Okay, so what is it? No, all right, I'm sorry. Let's go back. Wolf of Wall Street. You have to look. You can drive very nice vehicles. You can. It was explained to you that the more calls you make and the harder you work, the better off you will do. If you looked around your cubicle and said, wow, I'm in a cubicle and this table cost sucks and, geez, I don't like my desk and this. There was a guy next to you making 200 fucking phone calls, right?
Yes and
right?
No. Yes and no. Yes and no.
So the whole company failed.
No.
Because they were in cubicles.
We made a fucking ton of money. All of us. Like ridiculous money. Okay? But how I got the job was and it's interesting because we're working at that on that project, 404 Lafayette Street. I worked at that fucking building when I was going to school, when I was in college. It was a very affluential clientele. I got the job from a hedge fund manager who said, "Hey kid, when you're done with school, give me a fucking call. I'll give you a job."
Weren't you the towel boy at the?
No. Luckily, no. I was doing membership sales.
You were in sales. Okay. So you applied for that job. Let's take it back.
Okay.
Forget your hedge fund days.
Okay.
You went to work at a gym, a fitness place.
Yeah.
Did you apply for that job?
Yeah.
And when you sat down with the person that was hiring you, what did they explain to you? What did they say to you?
We're going to pay you
$10 an hour, if it was even that much, fine.
Whatever minimum wage was that.
But did they say you have the chance
to move up?
No, not to move up, but to make more money than you're selling memberships.
You're selling memberships. There was a commission. Okay. And he said, you know, at that time, I remember his name and we're still friends to this day. He now consults for other health facilities. His name is Roger Harvey. At that time, he was a recent graduate from Michigan State University. And he said, a brilliant guy, is a brilliant guy. He was saying, the health club industry is going to be in 10 years, you know, worth billions of dollars. Okay, so he gave me a job. And then there I was able to meet, you know, fucking ridiculously affluential people. That was one of the best times of my life because I got invited to some of the best fucking parties in New York City with the elite of the elite. And here I am, a Mexican-American kid from Sunset Park, Brooklyn, rubbing elbows and getting to know all these different people. So this gentleman says, we're running a hedge fund. He goes, I like you. He goes, I'm from Brooklyn too. And he goes, when you're done with school, call me. I'll give you a job on the spot. I know you got what it takes. So fast forward. By the way, this guy was such a cool dude, tons of money, dated nothing but porn stars.
Yeah, so he's showing his ass. He's trying to show a kid from Brooklyn who's picking up fucking towels that he made it, that he's the guy. And I'm going to, regardless of what, with no forethought, no look at the market, no future plans or thoughts, said, I'm going to hire you because you're Mexican too, and this is what I do.
He was Italian.
All right, whatever. But, you know, this is what I do. I hire people. I'm at the height of my career.
He goes,
you don't know if you could fucking sell or not.
Well, I thought I could sell.
And you're not
doing membership.
Yeah, but you're not doing that anymore.
Well, okay. So he said, by the time you're 25, he goes, you've made $1 million.
Fine.
I guarantee it.
Right.
This was his talk. Maybe it was just bullshit, maybe whatever. But I'll tell you, when I was 24, one of the companies that we pushed, we raised capital, venture capitalists, and then took company public. And then we were paid in shares. So we brought in a bunch of fucking investors, and they paid us with 10,000 shares of a company called Purchase Pro. Purchase Pro was humongous. If you look them up, I mean, they were when AOL had exploded. They were part of the network. Time Warner was part of it. Just astronomical. Network. And they gave me 10,000 shares. And when they gave me 10,000 shares, the shares were 98 cents. And he said, Rob, hold on to this for a fucking year. You're not allowed to sell it until I tell you you can sell it. So the other guys on the team all got 10,000 shares at about, it was under a buck. It was like 80 cents a share. So in 4 months, it went from cents. And this made CNBC News, I mean, Bloomberg News. It was worth $89 a share. I'm 24 years old, and I have 10,000 shares of a company that's trading at $89 a share.
Sounds to me like the SEC missed that one. That sounds like insider trading or something.
Whatever it was, you know.
Does that guy still have his license, by the way? Whatever happened to him? Whatever happened to said porn star fucker? What's his name? Dave Pounder? He got a degree in sociology now when the bottom fell out in 08?
I won't.
What's your point?
My point is that I didn't have to work 50, 60 hours a day to make that kind of money.
What if you did? That's fucking dumb luck. That's like winning a lottery. What if you did
Listen, what if you did work your ass off?
Let me ask you a question.
If that was the case.
What if you did work your ass off? Can you imagine if you worked your ass off?
But I did.
What if you had 30 of those purchase pros?
That wasn't the only one. When we were done with all the different companies that were done, and luckily I was able, when he said,
I'm going to have the engineer look that, what was the name? I'm going to have the engineer look this company up.
PPRO.
The hedge fund. I bet you they're out of business and a guy's in prison.
No.
You sure?
Absolutely.
Okay.
You were at my wedding.
Not Mitch.
No. You were at my wedding.
Yeah, of course.
He was at my wedding.
Oh, I guess I wasn't sat at the fucking table with him. What I was going to embarrass you?
Not at all.
Huh?
Not at all. But so the point I'm making is, if that was dumb luck, there was a bunch of other fucking dudes just like me with dumb luck. It's just too much. So
so you got 30 kids on the floor. All right.
I mean, we had a portfolio of like 60, 70 different fucking stocks, all worth around the same thing.
So you weren't being paid a salary.
We were. We were.
Okay.
And then as a bonus, when the company went public, you were guaranteed X amount of shares.
Gotcha.
Okay. Those shares were considered institutional ownership. An institutional owner in a company where the only other institutional owners were fucking dudes that were, you know, millionaires. Anyway, so you weren't allowed to sell it till he said, "You want to start cashing out, kid? Start cashing out." Luckily, I was out, you know, on time. And like my baptism money.
That you still have.
I still have. I was able to keep a lot of that.
Sure.
Okay. But I didn't have to fucking work 60 hours, 80 hours a week.
And that has set the tone for the rest of your life.
If you're scheduled to work 40 hours a week, a boss, an owner, a business owner is only really getting about 19 and change.
We know that. Does that make it right? All Harvard's saying is, look.
It doesn't. Or maybe it does, but it's the reality that we're living. And I don't
Should
think
it
we
be?
We can't change that, though.
Why?
Because that's just the way it is. You know, and we can
then
still
that,
be,
then that is a horrible outlook for our country.
That used to be
number one in manufacturing, number one in finance, one in science,
Trump,
in everything.
No, Donald Trump. We're still number one. You know, this bullshit about if you look at the real fucking numbers, we're number one economically. Our currency is fucking strong.
Are we number one
Absolutely.
Economically? Then why when China reset, were people almost ready to throw themselves off of buildings again?
No,
you know,
that's bullshit.
Reminiscent of 1929.
Your dad still works?
Yes.
Okay, ask him.
I talk to him every day about it.
It's bullshit. China doesn't kick our ass. No jobs are going to fucking China.
All the manufacturing has.
Yeah, but we can't.
First.
Okay, we can't change
that. All the textiles and stuff, that all went to Mexico. And you guys even fucked that up. Because you're so close to America, you say, what the fuck, man? These people making $17, $18 an hour, I want. And then what do we say? All right, fuck you. We'll go to China. Think about it.
No. Audi.
And now Germany, and now
Puebla.
In my heart of hearts, yeah, we are number one. We're the United States. We'll always be.
Absolutely.
Then why is the euro trading higher than a U.S. dollar? Just because they combined 14 countries' currencies doesn't mean anything. Come on, man.
Not by much.
It's that lackadaisical, hipster fucking outlook that you have where you can just sit back and say, this is just the way it is.
This is an economical fact.
Okay, Bruce Hornsby. It's just the way it is, right? You'll see.
That's a fucking myth when people say China's kicking our ass when Donald Trump gets on his fucking soapbox and says, we're losing jobs. That's bullshit. We're not losing jobs.
You're not alluding to – am I getting some kind of vibe off of you that you're starting to fucking compare me to Donald Trump or something along those lines? This is the third time you've said it.
Why would I say that?
Because, I don't know.
Because what you're saying sounds like Donald Trump.
No. What I'm saying, you know, so what? It may be the truth. You're so used to listening to career politicians. I mean, a guy's a dirtbag. He fucking put a lot of people out of business, a lot of companies out of business by not paying them.
Sure.
But he's still a businessman. Why did things apply years ago that just don't apply anymore? Business sense, business savvy, you know, looking at something for what it is.
Because
rather than
change.
Sitting back and letting, I understand things change.
And we have to adjust to that.
You do adjust to it, but the adjustment we're making is apparently and clearly not for the better. You're telling me that my employees are only giving me 19%?
No, that's not what I'm telling you.
What are you telling me?
I'm telling you that they're giving you...
You mentioned a Harvard study.
Yes.
Harvard, apparently they know everything.
Okay.
Just like Quinnipiac knows who's going
to
win the election.
They're not giving you 19%. They're
not even that much?
They're giving you what you need to be successful in a shorter period of time.
What if they gave me their all?
So what happens is there's only a certain amount of real work that you can do.
No, what you're telling me
is limitations.
in order to keep the status quo.
I'm not telling you this.
No,
I'm just explaining to you
but
a study that I saw.
You're saying in order to keep things going the way they are, in order for me to keep my job, in order for me to be, in order for me to just return just enough, this is all I got to do. And
no,
I can look
saying.
At Facebook and I can tweet and I can Snapchat and I can do all these neat little things, take pictures of myself and write a little message. Wow, how technology. Is advanced.
It's not directly what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that our economy, our workforce has been successful at what they're doing all these years based on what a real work week is like, because so much other, not just the internet, but so much other things are spent on things that are wasteful. One of the things that they brought up is like, how many times, think about it, how many times have you and I sat in a meeting that we're like, this was such a fucking waste of time?
Right.
Okay. That falls into the other, the difference of the 19 hours. So the purpose of the study was not to prove how lazy we are as a society, as a culture, as an economy. The purpose of the study was, how can we be more productive? They're thinking along the same lines as you are. So part of it was this bullshit time that we spent in ridiculous fucking meetings.
Agreed.
Bro, I can think of a bunch of meetings you and I have been at where we're just sitting there fucking texting each other because it's just nonsense.
Have I called those meetings?
No.
Okay.
It falls into our work time, into our work week.
But the difference is I extend mine. So the time that I spent wasted during the day, I make up at the end of the day.
We can.
I just don't go home. I just don't go home and shut the phone off.
When it's feasible. There's times where you just simply can't. The purpose of the study, again, was to find out how we could be more productive and find out where we're doing things that aren't productive.
I want to give an example. I went to Wahlburgers. Whatever it is.
Oh, yeah.
Up in Hingham, Mass.
We got a new one in Coney Island.
And I'm from the East Coast, but I go to the West Coast a lot. I'm an In-N-Out guy. In-N-Out Burger was to me the best hamburger.
Well,
fast food otherwise, better than Five Guys, but I'm going somewhere with this. All right. Better than Smash Burger.
Smash Burger is the shit.
Wahlburgers is the shit. So I sit down, and anytime I go places, whether it's a restaurant, any type of retail sales type of facility, I evaluate it. So I sit down and I eat my hamburger and I say to myself, it's the best hamburger I've ever had. And then I look around and there was good people there. Good people behind the bar, good people, good staff, mm-hmm. waiters, waitresses, the person at the front. So I was there on a Tuesday. I was back for a hockey tournament over the weekend and I told my friends, you got to go to fucking Wahlburgers, man. You got to go. It's the best hamburger you'll ever eat. Come on, I can't. I said, trust me on this. We go on a Saturday, sit right down, same thing. Same level of consistency. Then I start, I get a little scared for them because it's a great product. And this is what I'm getting into. How can they sustain it all over the world when they have a shit pool of employees waiting in line? Everybody thinks that they should be paid, and I alluded to this earlier, they should be paid more. Where's the guy that's going to go to a Wahlburgers or a Smashburger and work their ass off rather than go in and get the attitude that I'm entitled, I'm working here for this amount of money, you know, why should I be doing this? This is just fucking absurd. I'm just doing this to get through a hard time. There's people that have made careers out of being a waiter. Go to Peter Luger's. You can make a now. Okay, obviously their tips are a little bit bigger than a Wahlburgers, but where is that pride? And what bothers me and what I'm getting to is,
that's a good question though.
These studies and these things that Harvard put, if I'm only getting 19% or whatever the number may be, I don't want Harvard coming down on us saying that we're incorrect. But the bottom line is, where is that pride of ownership? Where is that pride of work? Everything nowadays is, I don't care. I don't care. We had this young man come and open a door for us. He's sitting right here. He's engineering this program. There's a pride of workmanship there.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? I'm hearing the levels change. I know I'm not talking directly into the microphone and things like that. These people are few and far between.
Right.
And you take a foreign worker, somebody that wasn't born and raised in the United States that come here and understand that this is, you know, the land of opportunity. After 2 years, they're disgruntled and they're like, why should I break my ass when the people that live here are not working nearly as hard as I have been? It's just this whole thing, this is what's bothering me, is this lackadaisical approach and this thing, this pass the buck type attitude where I don't own this company. I don't give a shit. I don't want to advance. I want to get my paycheck and leave.
But it's the difference between those that are successful and make it and those that are just part of the status quo. I mean, I think it's that simple.
In the United States, you can be part of the status quo and fuck. It's better than living in Honduras where It's the largest murder rate in the world.
But
I mean,
that's because you got the Mare Salvatruchas.
Stop. Don't talk about my people.
I think it's that simple, cabrón. I think it comes down to those that are successful and make it and those that just live life.
But you're not hearing me. But no. Living life in the status quo in the United States
for some people,
is
that's
far better. Even
of course.
Even
of
as an
course.
Even as an American.
Of course.
Even though when you guys are on Facebook all the time and all these nitwit apps, you're looking at people's Lamborghinis and people's Bugattis and this and that, you're getting it shoved up your ass.
Right.
But you're not smart enough to turn that shit off.
Exactly.
That's what bothers me. Turn that shit off and go to work. And maybe you'll have a Bugatti. Maybe you'll have a
have a good Bugatti.
Well, see, now there you go. You'll never.
Okay. And I can think back to a friend of mine who went to a really good school. He's a teacher now at a school, but he went to Columbia. Okay. Spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on his education. And now he's a New York City teacher making 60 grand, if that.
Did he tell you that he was pigeonholed into that position, or did he say, you know what, I'm fucking lazy.
No.
I can get this position for what? Rather than go to a prep school, rather than go degree.
Listen.
He was pigeonholed into it, right?
No.
It was the system's fault.
No, it's not. It was something that it was a young guy that believed in educating. He's an educator by nature, I think. You know, someone who cares about the community. He actually happens to be a very white bread, if
oh,
hold on,
you motherfucker.
Listen, he is one of the
all right, fine. So
listen,
then I don't want to hear him fucking complain that he doesn't have a Bugatti. If that's what he wants to do, great.
He doesn't,
no problem.
He doesn't complain. He's happy with what he's doing because he feels he's doing something for the betterment of humanity.
All right, good. That's poor example number two.
I'm not done yet.
That is.
I'm not done yet.
You know I'm famous for not letting anybody finish.
I'm not done
yet.
That's not the point of the story.
It's atypical. Now,
that's not the point of the story.
Okay.
The point of the story is he tells me, he goes, one of his first jobs, and he's been transferred around to different schools, but one of his first jobs right out of teacher's college was in a really what we would consider or what society would consider a bad neighborhood in Brooklyn, a rough neighborhood in Brooklyn. And he said, he goes, it breaks my heart every day when I talk to these kids, and these were at that point elementary school kids. And he said, what do you kids want to be when you grow up? And they're telling him all these different things. And he's like, nothing makes me more sad, breaks my heart, that these kids are never, for whatever reason in their life, are never going to fulfill these quote-unquote dreams that they want. One kid says,
first,
I want to be...
First of all, that's a nitwit statement. Anybody can do anything.
That's
number
not
two,
true.
Number
that's,
two.
That's not true.
Why isn't it true?
Because if that was the case...
If you want to be an astronaut...
If that was the case, then we'd all be fucking astronauts. We'd all be astrophysicists.
Yeah,
we'd all be CEOs of Microsoft. It's just
so why doesn't he
fact.
Sit them down and say, you're fucking terrible in math and you don't know anything about science. You're not going to be an astronaut. Pick up a broom or find something else that you maybe aspire to. But you can't do that at a very young age. Maybe in his teen years, the kid fucking excels in math and physics. But the bottom line is this bullshit that is spewed constantly on social media about you can
what
do...
What is your problem with social media?
Do
you belong to any social media?
Absolutely not.
Why?
Because it's a big waste of time. What have you gained as a human being? What knowledge have you fucking developed from looking at, you know, great.
I don't know about knowledge.
You know what I like about it?
News.
I hear funny jokes. I'll turn the TV on. I want fucking breaking news.
You're going to tell me you don't find those Vine videos I send you funny?
Yeah, but you know what? King Batch is on fucking Nick Cannon's show. I can turn that on and watch him.
And on that note, all good things come to an end.
Shit, I got another 4 hours in me.
Hey, cabrón.
Pay the bill. Let's go.
Thank you so much for taking the time, for hanging out.
Anytime, always available. Thank you to the listeners for listening to me rant.
Thank you so much. We'll see you all in the promised land.